Hi, and welcome, everyone. You are on the Enhancing Couples Post-Baby Relationships teleclass. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Heather Ouida. I'm a co-founder of Mommy Bites. We've been doing these free online classes for over 5 years now, which is very exciting. And our expert today, Debbie Pincus, was actually one of our original speakers on our teleclasses, and she used to do in-person events for us, and she's just awesome, and I'm proud to say that she's become a good friend of mine over the years. So a little bit about Debbie before we get into the teleclass. Debbie Pincus is a psychotherapist. She's been practicing for over 25 years. She has offices in Larchmont in Manhattan, but she does do phone and Skype sessions across the country and overseas. And I know a lot of our Mommy Bites moms from all over have taken her up on that. She practices in couples therapy and parenting. She leads parenting groups and does one-on-one coaching as well. And she is also the author of Calm Parent, which is a book and CD series, and is also the author of 7 books on interpersonal relations for children. Her email is debbie@debbiepincus.com, but I will email you all of this as well. She's a phenomenal resource, and I'm just truly honored that she's on as our expert today. So welcome, Debbie.
Thank you so much, Heather. It's great to be here again.
So we have a lot of people on this call, and we have a lot of questions that are already being typed in. So let's get started. So again, a little bit of background. So Debbie and I have been doing these online classes again for 5 years. We found the kind of the best way to get the flow going of these type of classes is I'll do some Q&A with Debbie just to get us started so she can sort of lay the groundwork. And then I'll go ahead and take questions throughout. So go ahead and type in any questions you have. I'll be taking them in real time. So, Debbie, let's get started.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie, what are some shifts in marriages once a child is born? And I think a lot of times we think, shouldn't that be a time couples get closer?
Right. It's a wonderful time and a joyous time for parents. But, as we know, it can also, you know, joy can also be stressful because it involves change. And, you know, it is not the baby that creates the change, but rather how each person reacts to the baby, to the new person that's entered into a family system, and how each person reacts to that change. So before the baby, for example, you know, most likely the couple focused a lot of their attention and love on one another. Well, when the new baby comes, what shifts? Attention to one another. And that can cause a certain kind of stress and change between the adults. So with a new baby, the focus shifts and expectations of one another can increase. Perhaps the husband misses his wife's full attention or feels like an outsider in this triangle now between mother, baby, and himself. So expectations can increase of each other with the stress of a new baby. These expectations can cause disappointments. They can cause pressure. They can cause more fighting. And, you know, often couples can be quite perplexed by this change. Wasn't this supposed to be a wonderful time for us? How come there's so much stress here? And that's aside from just trying to get some sleep and just trying to get the baby and be able to eat while the baby's trying. You know, there's so many other things going on. But within that, we lose sight of each other. And with that can come stress in the marriage.
And Debbie, when we talk about sort of post-baby, I just want our listeners to know, I mean, Debbie and I are both parents. We'll use the phrase post-baby or, you know, feeding your baby. But what we really mean is baby and on through the developmental chain. I mean, it's also very stressful. I have a teenager now. That's very stressful on a marriage. So when Debbie and I talk about this, we kind of mean the changes after the baby enters the world and beyond.
Right.
And so, Debbie, you mentioned the triangle as if it's a problem. is it necessary and normal that the focus would have to be on the baby, toddler,
right,
preschooler?
Right. Absolutely. The baby is completely dependent and needs care, and all the way through, a child needs a certain amount of focus and attention. And, of course, that's normal. But with any triangle, you know, now we have somebody else in that triangle, in that dynamic, it is the couple loses, again, a little bit of that focus and attention on one another. So the couple needs to make sure to find time for each other, even if it's just a few minutes of a day, or just reassuring and loving words to one another, that you still matter to me, that you still count in all of this. And again, the problem isn't the focus on the baby. We all know that baby's going to need focus, but it's how each person, let's say in this case the husband, reacts to his wife's perhaps withdrawal, and how she then reacts to his reaction to her withdrawing. Okay, so it gets into how we react to these subtle changes. In a marriage, it is always this dynamic of how much do I matter to you? There's always that balance between, am I getting enough or too little? And that push and pull and that pursuing and distancing. And these are very subtle things, but they cause anxiety and reactivity. And half the time, we don't even know what we're reacting to. But it's there. It's underlying it. And that other person, that other dynamic that comes into play takes us away a little bit. And I think there's always a reaction to that.
I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned that. I think, you know, Debbie, I can be a very reactive person, and that time for me, and I actually don't think enough women talk about this, but that time for me post-baby was the most stressful on my marriage. Looking back, I actually am shocked we even made it through. I'm glad to say we have. We've been together almost 20 years, dating longer. But it is incredibly stressful. And the only way I can describe it is that everything is more intense. So your love is more intense. Your love for each other, your love for your baby can be more intense. But also your kind of your anger, your hurt, like everything at that time is hypersensitive.
Right. That's right. That's right. Because your need, it's really that expectations go up because there's more stress, particularly on the parent that's the caretaker, and those, therefore, the expectation of the other person goes up. Help me, I need more help, and everything becomes more intense, as you're saying, and how people react to that intensity has a lot to do with the how well the marriage does, and so yes. People feel overwhelmed and overloaded and then pressured.
So keeping that in mind, what would be the ideal way for a wife, or if there's a husband on today's call, a husband, to manage him or herself once a child is born? Like, what can we do about it? So, you know, great, we all agree it's super hard and everybody's tired, but like, what can we do about it?
Well, you asked the right question here, because it's, each person needs to think about how can I manage myself well and not just live in reaction to the other person or not try to manage the other person. How can I keep thinking about how to manage myself when I'm more stressed, when I'm more needy, when I'm more exhausted, when I'm more overwhelmed? You know, not, you know, he should or she should do for me, but what can I do for myself to have some self-discipline around the intense emotions that come up around this? So perhaps, whoever's the caretaker here recognizes that there is a shift in attention and not to over-focus on the baby and under-focus on her husband or herself. And the other parent has to recognize the temporary but necessary shift of focus and not take it personally or feel threatened by it. And find ways to get one's needs met in, you know, if it's not just with the partner, in other ways. And to really be reasonable and realistic with one another and try to figure out what's in the other person's best interest as well as one's own and manage that well. And so, and of course, keeping communication open about concerns with, you know, with these realistic and reasonable expectations of one another certainly helps. understanding that there's going to be changing dynamics rather than just reacting to what's going on and the feelings of loss through change.
You know, I want to pause for a moment because what Debbie just said, listeners, is a theme that she carries through all her parenting workshops and one that has served our community very well and me personally well. And that is the notion of acknowledging that really the only person you can truly, truly control is yourself.
Right.
And that's really hard. Trust me, I have a lot of control needs, and it is like was shocking to me that my husband couldn't read my mind, and shocking to me that, you know, when the baby was crying, I was like, dude, you know, we've been doing this for 6 months. You know how to calm the baby. Like, just, and so, you know, my anger would, you know, get more intense. But the truth is I can't, as much as I would love to, I can't control everybody else in my life. I really can only control how I feel, how I manage it, how I communicate.
You react to it.
Kind of how I react to it, exactly. So I just want people to kind of have that resonate with them throughout this class. Debbie, is this a good time? There's a question that's been typed in, mm-hmm. and this caller wants to know, how can I reconnect with my husband after growing apart? And here's the key phrase, for so long.
Well, that's a great question, and I'm assuming that distancing has started to occur perhaps before or once the baby has arrived, because it's easy for that to happen. You know, that process of a slow kind of drifting away. Sometimes one parent just gets so immersed, as one would, in the baby or the new life and the new expectations, and perhaps the other person gets more involved in work or whatever, and slowly they're distancing, and suddenly it just occurs to us, wow, there's so much distance. And I do get to that in a list of things that we can do and ways to manage that, but most importantly is not stand on ceremony, not say, well, he should or she should, is to take charge of connecting. And whether that means to make sure that you're moving toward that person and not further away from that person, not living in reaction to because they're distant. What can I do? What can I do today? What can I do? What five things can I do every day to make that person feel like they matter, they count? How can I pay attention to them, give them what they need and listen to them? Again, you know, many times we think we're listening when we're really not. And we're defensive rather than actually staying open to what somebody else is feeling or needing, and to really make it our own business to say, this is really important, and this relationship is important to the well-being of the family, and so how do I make that a priority? So, you know, thinking about ways that you will move closer to that person. How are the little ways that I myself have drifted away? Do I bring that person a little coffee in the morning? Do I do that extra little nice thing? Do I leave them a little note about how much they mean to me? What are the things we can do? And again, that's part of that management of self.
It's so true. Thinking about other people, and it doesn't have to be huge.
Big.
It doesn't have to be that. You're so right. And then, so Debbie, what happens if one of the parents is able to manage himself or herself well through the transition? One is and one isn't.
Mm-hmm.
How do you
right.
get yourself on the same page?
Right. And, you know, you don't have to be exactly on the same page, but if one person can be aware that this is a process and that there's a transition going on, and so to not take things quite as personally as we might, and not get so angry to the with the other person who might be either pressuring for more contact or is taking a lot of distance. You, the person, and can continue to do the right thing that you would consider the right thing, to kind of stay by those principles of the kind of person you want to be, and listen. And just like we said, listen to the other person's concerns or complaints, take them in. You know, have your own boundaries, but listen openly and see if there's something that needs to be changed. You know, keeping the communication lines open. And somehow, when we start getting more chronic anxiety going and more fusion going, we somehow just kind of can tune each other out if we're not careful. So again, making sure we keep that relationship as a high priority.
And it's, you know, I think one of the main problems is that you can't really get mad at a baby, right? Right? Like, you can in your head, but you can be annoyed.
They're too adorable.
Like, mm-hmm. They're too, yeah. And you know rationally that, like, they're not sleeping, not to torture you, but they're just not sleeping. So mm-hmm. the problem is that someone's going to get it, right? The baby can't get it, but, like, someone's going to get it, and it's often the partner. Like, you need to, sometimes people just need to get it out.
That's right. And, you know, one person, you know, the person that is getting it out, because under certain kind of, you know, certain amount of stress, we like to blame, project, yell, scream. And so we can do better about managing that urge a little better. And hopefully the other person can recognize, okay, I'm not going to take this to heart. I know what this is about. So I don't have to get, you know, too thrown by it. But I think each person doing a little better on their own behavior is certainly helpful.
You know, I think I mentioned this on our last class, Debbie, but so my husband and I have a catchphrase that we've adopted over the years to alert the person, the other person, of what you just said. And we always say we're coming in hot. Like, if we say we're coming in hot, it means I'm coming home at the end of the day and I'm a 10 already. Like, I'm coming in hot. I'm warning. If you say something, chances are I'm not going to go crazy because you've really genuinely done anything that I'm upset about. But again, like, I'm bubbled over.
Yep. And that's a great way to do it, because you're taking ownership. This is mine. I'm already feeling it, and I can get triggered easily. I'm just letting you know, and I'm trying my best to do a better job. But you know, you too on the other end can not take it all so to heart. You know, that we help each other rather than work against each other. Reminding each other that we're on the same team here. But stress is the problem. You know, stress and the fusion that goes with that, meshment that goes with it, what you should be for me, what I should be, what I expect you to do, that's where we get into all the intensity and all the emotionality. You know, we wouldn't necessarily do that with an acquaintance or a friend down the street, but when it gets intense and we have all this expectation of one another, it gets hot, and
yeah.
We have to be careful. Right.
Coming in hot. I have some other questions that have been typed in. So one of them to the listener that wrote in about first focusing on kind of bedtimes and naps and how this person, you know, asked how to get their toddler to fall asleep so that she has time for herself and in turn time for her husband. Mm-hmm. For the purposes of this call, to that caller, I will send some links. That we've done other classes on toddler sleep, and I have some great resources. So I will send that to you because I think that's a great, great question. If you are tired, it is hard to care or carve out time for anyone else.
You're not kidding.
So I think that's a really great question.
And that's
so
another. And that's another place where we have to work together as a team. Let's really make our priority together getting these kids to sleep or getting ourselves enough sleep so that we can be together and so that we can have time with each other. So it's, you know, and you'll, there's various ways to do that, but I think that when you know you're both on the same team together to work on that, because that's going to be helpful to us, the couple.
I also want to read this one. Now, we've actually, I think, addressed a lot of this caller's questions in the first few minutes of this call.
Yeah.
But I want to read it just because I feel like it's sometimes nice to know you're not alone with everything people have on their plate. So this caller says, how can I use the stress I have and my husband has emotionally and financially? My son is over a year. I'm still breastfeeding. I'm with him 24/7, working freelance once in a while because financially we have to stay afloat. I have no help. He works, you know, full time. We're bickering often. Sex is pretty much nil. We need help. You know, she's basically saying, like, I'm drowning. Like, what can I do if I'm drowning? So I know we've covered a lot of that, but anything else that we can add? Because I'm sure that
Getting
a lot of
as much support.
Like
you know, look, you know, some people have more support than others. The more we have family or other connections or finances, or, you know, we're going to have more support, and that, of course, is going to help. But there are some real realities to, you know, what this person is saying, is that there's a lot on one's plate, and that in itself is stressful. What we don't, that's kind of what I call the first hit. It's enough to just manage what's in front of us. Let's not add that second hit, which is, you should be this for me. Because where the real stress can come in is, on top of that, is fighting with each other. Because we feel, everybody feels so depleted. And we lose our resilience. And so then we're on top of each other. And that fighting and that stress and all that emotionality just adds a huge layer of more stress to what's already there. So, you know, I don't know if that answers it, but to try to deal with the, you know, your relationship in a way that's manageable, so that it will be a support rather than another burden to what's going on.
And, you know, just to piggyback on what you just said, Debbie, I would also offer to this caller and anyone else that's in this situation, I think a lot of the self-help books say, like, these grand statements like, go on a date night every week, hire a babysitter, go on a date night. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, A, are too tired, B, financially, you know,
yeah.
C, different work schedules. So, you know, one of the things that I think worked well in my family, and I think other people in our community have mentioned worked well, is it doesn't have to be this big, huge to-do. You can maybe find one TV show that you both love watching, and, you know, commit to that.
Look forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Just once a week, that maybe your schedules overlap, just something that you're kind of just together and you both can look forward to. You know, obviously it doesn't have to be TV if that's not your thing, but just something. Because it's hard when you're in it. It's really hard to ever envision that you'll ever be out of it.
Go ahead.
No, finish what you're going to say.
I was just going to interrupt by saying, you know, and that's an important piece too, is this too shall pass. You know, it does change. It does get easier. It does look different, and we just have to keep looking ahead. It has other problems, other difficulties. But some of the, you know, just to always know that things can change and get better.
It's so hard. It's so hard.
It is so hard. But to remember, go ahead.
I was going to say, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about actually kind of what we've just been building up to, which is, are there typical ways and natural ways that people respond when stress increases? And can we talk about those?
Yes. And I think that's important because, you know, when stress hits, when there are a few very, very typical ways that all humans respond to it, sort of a fight or flight response. And so I have them divided up into one way that we manage our stress is by blaming others, projecting onto others, fighting with others. Because if you think about it, in the moment, it almost feels better to let it all out, to blame it on somebody else. It's a way of managing that moment of stress or distress. Another way that people manage their stress is by distancing. You know, this is way too intense for me, so I'm just going to distance. I don't want anything to do with this. So they bury their head in the sand. They don't deal. You know, it's a form of just moving away from intensity. That's another way people manage their stress. Another way is what's called over or under functioning. Okay, I either function for everybody else because somehow that calms me down. I'm in control of everything. I take overdoing for everybody. Or some people under stress start to underfunction, can't find their keys, can't pull it together, can't seem to get out of bed. You know, it's another way of managing stress. Notice all of these natural ways that we manage stress just ultimately create more stress.
Right.
And the other way that is very common is that to manage stress, let's say, between ourselves and our mate, between any kind of dynamic of two people is that we bring in a third. We start to focus on somebody or something else. And a child is that perfect place to deflect to. I can't deal with the intensity here, so let me put a lot of my emotional energy into my child, to my baby, to something else. And so we deflect onto the baby, which isn't necessarily great for the child because they get more than they need, and it's not great for the couple because they're not dealing with their issues. But it's very common and it's very typical those ways. And, of course, that's not the best ways, but those are the natural ways. Put that all together, it's kind of fight, flight, and caretaking, as you know, our friend, you know, was the animals do.
Right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
keeping that in mind, and you know, I want you to maybe talk about some ways that, you know, now what can we do about this, mm-hmm. or some healthier ways. And then I also want to remind our listeners that if anyone has any questions, to please feel free and type them in. There's a link that was sent, and you'll end up at a homepage, and you can just type in. It can be anonymous, and you can type in as many questions as you want. And I'll be feeding those again in the next few minutes.
Heather, I add to that, if anybody wants to type in ways that better ways that they've found to manage their stress that have helped and have worked.
Yes, great idea. Any mm-hmm. tips? Yeah, that would be awesome too.
Yep. Mhm. But
so,
I think
what are some healthier ways that we can respond to this?
Right. You know, there are many ways, and I think you and your husband have a good example of that. It's recognize it and name it. You know, oh boy, I'm feeling it today. I had a hard time at work, and I'm going to need to come home and either just have nobody bothering me, or I need to talk it through. But you're owning that it's your stress, rather than having a bad day at work and coming home and then spilling it on everybody else. Okay, but if we can own it and name it, we usually do better with it. Wow, I'm having a hard time. This is what I'm going to need when you get home, when I get home, when we're together. And, you know, hopefully the other person is sensitive to that and can give it to us. And if they can't, we have to live with that. So, also, I think it's important just to recognize your style of dealing with stress. Do you fall into, you know, when I'm stressed, I tend to yell and scream at everybody? Do I tend to be a distancer? Do I tend to just start getting bossy and functioning for everybody and doing too much and then being worn down? What's my way? And is that helping, or is that fueling the fire? And begin to find, again, that better way of helping yourself. But first, I think you have to recognize and be aware of what you're doing that may increase it. And then I always say, and then we got to get a grip of ourselves and take that pause and you know, find those ways that you can get that adrenaline down or feel better, and not necessarily through somebody else. You know, if you were calm, then I can be calm. But when you're not, then, you know, we got to find it in ourselves. So is it, I know for me, it's taking a walk or listening to music or talking to somebody, getting clearer and more thoughtful, get a more thoughtful perspective of what's going on and ways to solve it rather than to just get into all the emotionality of it. And then you work to solve the problem in front of you. As we can do, and as we can do well, when we can think more clearly because we're not quite so anxious and stressed.
And
I go on to say that, you know, you want to watch also, and this gets into a little more complicated things, but to watch the kind of role that you play in the family. Do you notice that you tend to feel like you have to accommodate everybody else, or you tend to be a pleaser, or do you tend to be the one who feels more helpless and needs from everybody else? And how do these roles help or not help your stress level? Because usually when we play that role that we've played all our life in some way, they're not necessarily the most helpful in functioning well. Watch also how watch how you react to stress, and you know, do you just do that knee-jerk reaction to relieve the distress of the moment, or can you get to be a little more thoughtful about a better way as you manage that initial hit and then, you know, get into your better thinking brain to think, what can I do here that will not escalate things? Are you doing too much for your kids or for others? Are you doing too little? But look at that and see if that's increasing some of your stress levels. And what are, and then I have some list of things we can do while raising kids to protect your marriage, but we can get into that if there's no other questions.
So let's pause for questions. So actually, this is sweet. Someone just typed in, this is so helpful. Thank you. That's nice. Thank you for the positive feedback, Debbie, and I love that. Thank you. Thank you. And someone else just typed in their tip. Oh, this is a good one. Their tip for kind of managing their relationship, and this is really technology at its best, is texting each other before they get home if there are things on the to-do list. Like, can you please pick up milk, or I have a late, you know, meeting.
Yeah.
Is there any way that, you know, I can sleep in an extra 20 minutes?
That's great.
I think that's a great, great tip, because sometimes when we can kind of digest it first before we see the person, like, you may see a text come in, like, can you please pick up milk, right? And in your, you know, if that was done in person, you'd be like, your eyes are, you're like, I just got home, or
right.
I have so much other stuff to do. But if that comes in writing before you see the person, you can kind of digest it first and deal with it.
Well, that's
that's
that pause that we always need to make sure we have. It's just, okay, this feels like another thing I have to do. And then we get to pause. And on the text, we get to pause and think, okay. And as you say, digest it, right?
Yeah, that's a great, thank you for that tip, listener. That's awesome. That's a really good one. So, Debbie, we are coming to the end of our time together. Mm-hmm. Any kind of, I think you just mentioned a last-minute list you wanted to share with people, any last-minute things to help people?
Protect our marriage. Keep that eye on the ball, and don't get neglectful or sloppy about, you know, your relationship ever. I like to think of it as that ball that, you know, imagining a ball that rolls out to sea and the wave takes it a little farther out and then a little in and then a little farther out again, a little farther in. You know, somebody needs to keep their eye on that ball that it doesn't float too far away. And so keep your eye on that. Communicate concerns. Ask, how are we doing? And listen and improve. Let yourself be known to the other person and let yourself hear the other person without trying to shape the other person up or shut them down because we're not liking what we hear. Try to stay open, and as hard as that can be sometimes. And listen openly, attend to the other person's needs. Make the changes, even if your partner doesn't. And listen carefully and, you know, decide if that's a change that I can make and I'm willing to make, even though I don't feel like it, but it's important to my spouse. Recognize marriage naturally goes through lots of difficult periods of gridlock, and working through those impasses certainly helps, if we can get through it, to a lot more growth. And just because we hit gridlock does not mean something's wrong with the marriage. It's natural. And watch out for too much criticism of the other person. Replace it with praise, and avoid those couple of horsemen, the criticism, the contempt, and stonewalling each other. Be emotionally generous and try to walk in your partner's shoes every once in a while. Yeah.
That is so helpful. Thank you, Debbie. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great. And I know I would also say that the people on this call that carved out time in their busy lives to be on this call, that also speaks highly of how committed you are to your relationship and yourself and parenting and marriage and all that jazz. So
already keeping an eye on that ball. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was trying to say. They are already keeping an eye on the ball. So on that note, thank you, Debbie Pincus. I will send everyone Debbie's contact information. I will send some more additional resources to everyone. And thank you all for being on this call, for carving out the time, for your awesome questions, for your input, and just being here. We Debbie and I appreciate it so much, and thank you.
Thank you all, too.